This is Digital Story Podcast number 690, June 4th, 2019. Today's theme is Adventures of a Non-iPhone Photographer. I'm Derek Story. My sister lives in McKinney, Texas. And with summer approaching, we wanted to go out and visit her before it got too hot. So we caught a flight to Dallas Love to meet her and her husband on a warm, humid afternoon. I packed the Fujifilm XF10 digital camera and an Olympus OM2S program film camera that I was testing for the film camera shop. And the interesting, sometimes funny adventures that I had with those two non-iPhone cameras are the topic of today's show. When I think about this trip, the one thing that really jumps out at me is that people are so used to seeing smartphones for photography that anything else seems like you're handing them a rock from Mars or something like that. It is really fascinating to me. And I was talking about film camera before we went out, and they were fascinated by the project and the film camera shop and all of that. And then they also thought that the Fujifilm XF10, which is a digital camera, they asked me if that was a film camera because it has this retro look. And I was going, it's even to that point, right? Even these cameras such as my Olympus Pen and the Fujifilm that have this throwback design to them make people think that they're film cameras. So I told them, you know, I really want to photograph downtown McKinney, Texas. It's just a sharp looking place, and it's a fun place to hang out. So I took the XF10 and the Olympus, and I was really planning to shoot primarily film because I had this thing in my mind, you know, this look, because, you know, McKinney has this sort of classic, a little bit older downtown feel to it. And I thought that it would translate really well on film. But of course, I've got to have a digital camera too. I just don't want to have a film camera all the time. So I brought both, and I needed both. So it was a good call. So I have a few stories for you that sort of illustrate this idea that people are super accustomed to smartphone cameras and really taken back by anything else that's different. And the first story is called Bobby's Blue Harley. We were at a place in McKinney called Tupp's Brewery. And Tupp's Brewery, you can't really get the beer like here in California or even in all parts of Texas. They're a small brewery, but they make an amazing IPA. And if you're ever in that part of Texas, Plano or McKinney or any of those northern Texas areas that are outside of Dallas, you can probably get Tupp's IPA. And I highly recommend it. I mean, Jeff, my brother-in-law, told me it is his favorite IPA, and I had a cold glass of it there, and it was amazing. I mean, it tasted really, really good. So we were standing outside. They have a taco truck outside on the weekends, which is, you know, really a nice touch. So we're standing outside, you know, thinking about, okay, what do we want to eat before we go back in and have another beer? And through the parking lot there that we're at, this very kind of industrial feeling sort of parking lot, came a rider on a beautiful blue Harley Davidson. I mean, this was the paint job on this bike was absolutely fantastic. And he looked great. He had his cool helmet on. He had a ZZ Top like beard going that just looked great. And then he had these really cool cowboy boots. They were Day of the Dead cowboy boots, and they had all these little skulls all over. And they were about three different kinds of leather. Saw him rolling in, and I go to Deleen and Teresa and Jeff. I go, I've got to go talk to this guy. So just get me whatever you get. Just get me one of whatever you get. And I'll be back in a minute. So before he got off his bike, I went over, and he still had his helmet on. And I wanted to talk to him before he, you know, dismounted and took off his helmet and all that. And I introduced myself, and I had the Olympus film camera in my hand. And I said, I'm a photographer, and I love your bike. I absolutely love your bike. Do you mind if I take a portrait of you on it? So he said, no, it's fine. It's cool. It's great. I'm standing there with the Olympus in hand, and he's sort of looking at me like, what kind of photographer are you? He was expecting me, to pull out my iPhone and just to snap a quick shot like that. But I had the Olympus 2S program with the Olympus 40mm f2. I love that lens. I actually paid more for that manual focus lens than I normally do for a manual focus lens, but that's because they weren't that many made, and it is such a cool lens. And once again, it's a little wider than a 50, which I like, but it's not as wide as a 35 or 28. Really good for these kinds of shots. So I had the right lens on, which means I could still work fairly quickly. But I was lining up the shot, and at first he was looking at me and he's going, what kind of camera is that? And I go, it's a film camera that I am testing, and I shoot with film because it has a certain look that I like sometimes. And he goes, well, where do you get film? And I go, you can actually get film all sorts of places. You can get it online, or I even have a camera shop in town that stocks film. So buying film's okay. Now I have to send it out to be processed, and I get a scan, so I'll still ultimately see the images on my computer, even though I'll have, negatives as well. And he was just amazed, like I had just landed from another planet, and was telling him about some mystical ancient technology. I mean, he's very kind and he's very patient with me, because I tried not to go on too much about this. But, I did want to answer his question because, the guy was doing me a solid here. I lined up the shot and just took a few frames. I didn't want to take too much of his time because, he was there to get a beer. He told me his name, and his name was Bobby. Bobby headed on in and got a beer. Oh, by the way, I photographed his boots too, which I'm sure he thought that was a little weird, but I asked him first before I said it. I said, I love your boots. I asked him to talk about them for a minute, and then I said, can I, take a picture of them? So he probably thought I was some kind of weird Rain Man or something, it's like, big tall guy, like bending over with this, this device, this film camera, taking pictures of his boots. You can picture it in your head, I'm sure. He went ahead and sauntered on in. I got a taco at the taco truck, and then Jeff and I went in. It really highlighted to me, and this was just the beginning of things on this trip, but it really highlighted to me how unusual it is to carry anything but a smartphone for photography. My second anecdote, group shot with the XF10 at Sugar Bacon. So after we had a beer at Tupp's Brewery, it was time to get something to eat. And my sister asked me, well, where do you want to eat? And she presented a couple choices to me. And I said, which one is, most Texan? Here I am. I'm right outside of Dallas. I'm in the heart of northern Texas, and I want to go somewhere that's Texas. I want to have a good Texan meal. And she says, well, then it's easy. We're going to go to Sugar Bacon. So Sugar Bacon, again, is in downtown McKinney, and it's called Sugar Bacon Proper Kitchen. By the way, I have links to all this stuff. I have links to Tupp's Brewery in McKinney. I have links to Sugar Bacon, all the things I'm talking about. So if you go to the show notes, you can, learn more about these places. So one of the things that I liked about Sugar Bacon, in addition to the outstanding food, and it was delicious, was that they also had an extensive list of whiskeys. And anyone who's been listening to the show for a while knows that I appreciate good American whiskey. It had its own menu. The whiskey had its own menu. And my sister told me that, you should get a flight because, that way you can taste a couple of them. And I wanted to taste whiskeys, from the area, local whiskeys. The wait person helped me, kind of pick out the three whiskeys that I wanted in this flight. And they were really outstanding. The one that I like the best, by the way, is called Iron Root Whiskey. And it's out of Denison, Texas. And of the three, I thought it was head and shoulders above the other two, which were actually, quite good. Our drinks came and, I was tasting the whiskey. And I wanted to do a group shot of the four of us before the food came, because I always like to do the group shot before the table gets too messy. I like having drinks and, you know, maybe if there's an appetizer or two on the table, that's fine. But I don't want all the eaten food and all that kind of stuff in the shot. And this, maybe this is a hangover, or I should say a leftover, right, from my wedding days when I used to take pictures during the reception. When the wait person came back by, I said, can you take a shot of us? And she says, oh, yeah, great. Now, again, she was expecting me to hand her my iPhone, which was actually sitting there on the table. Instead, I had set up the Fujifilm XF10, and the reason why I wanted to use that camera was the lighting was kind of low in there at Sugar Bacon. It was nice for what we were doing, but not the greatest for a group shot. And I wanted to capture the ambiance of the establishment in addition to the group shot. And the XF10 has a great flash on it, a great fill flash that does a wonderful job of balancing the light for the subject with the environmental lighting. And so I thought this is the way to go. Plus, it has a much bigger sensor than my iPhone. So I get it all set up and I hand it to her. And again, she's just sort of looking at it. You know, you use a screen to compose on it and you just, you know, press the button. And I said, yeah, just go ahead and compose on the screen there. So she didn't quite know where to put her fingers. So I guided her where to put her finger to press the shutter. So she gets that part all lined up and she composes the shot. And then what she did with her finger when she took the shot is like she sort of jammed at the shutter with her finger. And you know, like the way that those of us that take pictures with cameras, you know, we put our finger on the shutter and then we slowly squeeze it when we take the shot. That way we don't jar the camera and the shots tend to be sharper. She had her finger a good quarter, half inch above the shutter button, and then she would tap it like she was tapping the screen on a smartphone to take a picture. And I really didn't want her to do that, but at the same time, you know, she was doing us a favor, and she had other tables, and it wasn't the time to go into great detail. So I thought, I'm just going to live with this. I'm just going to live with this sort of thing. And then the other thing that she did that I thought was really interesting, and I've noticed this now when other people hand me their phones, when younger people hand me their phones, I would always shoot a group shot of four people horizontally. That would just be what my natural inclination is. But she wanted to turn the camera vertically and take the shot as well. And even though I handed it to her horizontally. And again, this it comes out of smartphone culture, you know, where things are shot more vertically, and especially with folks that are younger and just grew up with smartphones. So, but when she did that, she had her finger on the lens, her other finger on the camera lens as she was holding it in the vertical position. So that time I did have to remind her, you know, that make sure she take her finger off the lens. And but then she covered the flash as well. And finally, I just thought, I'm just going to give in on this and just let it be. So she had the flash covered, but she did have her finger off the lens, and then she was jamming there at the shutter button. So believe it or not, she took about five shots. She took a couple horizontals and three verticals. I go, you know, I'm sure one of those shots are great. This is what I'm saying in my head. To her, I thanked her very much for her time and really did appreciate her taking a moment out to work with this foreign device. When I got the pictures on the computer later on, there was one shot that was workable. So, yay, hooray, but not all of them. No, not by any stretch was all of them workable. But I thought this was fascinating because, you know, I understood Bobby when, you know, I'm working with a film camera there, because that really is different. And people really don't walk around with film cameras much these days. But, you know, the XF10, I mean, that's a modern camera. That's in production right now. You can buy that at B&H or Amazon right now. And it is a very sophisticated digital camera. And the fact that it wasn't a phone, even though it was a digital camera, and that it caused so much confusion using it, that one surprised me more. That really did surprise me more than my experience with Bobby. again, it shows me how pervasive iPhones and smartphones and Android phones and all that are for photography compared to any type of what I would call normal digital camera. By the way, while I was in Sugar Bacon, one of the things that I wanted to do was take pictures of these whiskey glasses with the whiskey in them, because the setting and the lighting was really cool. And even though the light was down low, I could do that with the film camera. So what I did was I set the Olympus on the table, got everything lined up, and then I used the self timer and did a long exposure. And I'm really looking forward to see how those come out. I thought, you know, that would be kind of a neat artistic shot, especially with film. I did do a little film work in there using the self timer. Okay, the third story is called Shutter Challenge on Louisiana Street. When we walked out of Sugar Bacon, you know, we went there early because, you know, we didn't want to eat too late, and there was some other stuff we wanted to do that evening. We were in there fairly early, which was great because, you know, got a lot of attention from the wait people, and it was a little bit quieter. Super, super enjoyable. So when we walked outside, there was still light outside, which was kind of neat. And it was sort of my hope that I'd be able to do a little bit more photography after dinner as well. A storm had come in, not really a storm, it was just raining. And there was some lightning and thunder, however, which was sort of exciting. Streets were wet, and there was still enough light to work, and I was going, man, this is great. Daylene and Teresa, you know, they were sticking their heads in stores and doing a little bit of shopping, and Jeff and I hung around outside where I could do a little photography. So I had the Olympus again for this, and now keep in mind that I had had the flight of whiskeys, and then I had one old-fashioned after that. Not a ton to drink, but I was happy and digesting well, as I would say. So I'm outside, and I was going, I wonder how much light there is here to work. Holding the Olympus up to my eye, and I see that at f2, which is the maximum aperture of that 40 millimeter lens I was shooting with, that I could shoot at about a 30th of a second. I go, that's fine. A 30th of a second with this 40 millimeter lens, I am going to do some photography. I lined up this one shot that I really liked. It had this very cool building. It was one of the older buildings in town, I think. And then it had this tower in the background, the McKinney Tower in the background. And the tower had some neon light on it, and the lighting was good on the building, and there was still light in the sky. And I was going, boy, this could look really nice. So I lined it up, and I could see in the viewfinder that I had a 30th of a second to work with. I was going to go ahead and just shoot in program mode because I knew it would be wide open anyway. And I pressed the shutter, and the mirror goes up, but it didn't come back down right away. It just stayed up, and I'm going, oh, no. Now, this is something that when I test film cameras that I've worked on, a lot of times when the shutter goes, what happens is the mirror will go up, but it never comes back down. And, you know, there could be a couple reasons for that. Sometimes that's what some cameras do when the batteries run out. But I had fresh batteries in this. I was going, no, it's probably not the batteries. And then finally it came back down. Oh, so it did a long exposure here. At the time, I didn't really realize how long of exposure, but I'll give you a hint as to what happened. It was about a 10-second exposure there. Okay, something's wrong here. So I advance the film, and I line up the shot again, and I go, well, you know, maybe it'll work this time. And I press the shutter. The mirror goes up. Nothing happens again for about 10 seconds, and the mirror comes back down. Now, you have to remember, it's raining, and I can't, you know, there's a lot of ambient noise, so I can't really hear anything that's going on because of the, you know, the wind and the rain and all that good stuff. So now I'm really kind of bummed because I thought this camera had great potential. And I thought, man, this roll of film is going to look great. I'm going to put it in the store. It's going to make someone really happy. It's a fabulous camera. Now I'm kind of bummed, like something has gone wrong here. Looking at the camera, and I see that it has an electronic self-timer, not the old-fashioned, you know, kind of one that has a spring. and that I had been using the self-timer to take the shots of whiskey in the restaurant because the light was so low and I had to set the camera on table. And the self-timer was still on because it was an electronic self-timer. You know, you just set it and it just stays on until you turn it off. It's not like the regular spring self-timer that after you do it, then it takes a shot and then it's back to normal mode. What I had been doing is not taking long exposures, but I've been taking self-timer shots, not realizing it. Once I figured it out, I turned off the self-timer, took a third shot, and it was at a 30th of a second, just like it should have been. The reason why I tell you this story, other than I'm an idiot, is that even for those of us that work with older cameras, that work with cameras that are not iPhones or, you know, Samsung Galaxies, we sometimes, you know, forget exactly how they work because we're so used to the way that our modern cameras work, or the cameras that we shoot with all the time, namely, you know, smartphones. And that by forgetting how the cameras work sometimes, it can lead to, you know, rather embarrassing situations. Now, fortunately, it was just me and Jeff out there. And until he hears this podcast, not even Jeff knew what was going on. But I did make a note in my notes that two of those frames are going to look really weird. They're probably going to be some blurry picture of my face. There's going to be two selfies in there that I took with a 1980s film camera. So those are my three anecdotes that come from my experiences as a non-iPhone photographer during my trip to McKinney, Texas. Now, I did take a few iPhone shots, of course. I always do because I take them to complement the film shots so that I have a digital record of it. Took some shots in the airport and stuff like that with the iPhone too. But it was interesting, while I was out in the field, while I was out doing quote-unquote my serious or my art photography, I was using the Fujifilm or the Olympus, and that I might as well have been this very tall alien from a different planet carrying around these unusual devices. And I just think in today's world that that's fascinating, that smartphones have become so pervasive for photography. Attract more attention to your online gallery with a blog. So yes, our pictures tell 1,000 words, but sometimes a few additional sentences don't hurt either. And with your portfolio box site, you can easily add a blog to enhance your visual stories. And if you're using Portfolio Box already or thinking about using it for your best work, your online gallery, which it is fabulous for, both on your computer and, as I talked about last week, on your smartphone as well, I would consider adding a blog page to the gallery. And the reason being, it gives you a chance to talk a little bit about some of the images that are in your gallery. The blog page is attractive in itself, and it just sort of rounds things out. And a lot of times when people are very attracted to images, especially travel shots, they want to know a little bit more about them, and the blog can help you do that. Now, to create a blog on Portfolio Box, first, just click on New Page. That's located at the very top of your admin panel on the right side of the screen. Then select Blog on the given options in the second panel. Enter the name of your blog, and then you can start creating and editing your first entry. It's really that easy. I have a link to the post that explains how to do it, so you can take a look at it and see screenshots of exactly where you should go. And if you have one or two galleries, and especially travel galleries or, you know, galleries of interesting places, adding a blog page, I think, is an excellent idea. And this helps you present your best self online using a Portfolio Box site. Now, to create your own Portfolio Box site, all you have to do is click on the link in the show notes or click on the tile that's on every page of the digital story. Once you do that, then you'll be taken over to our landing page and you can create a free Portfolio Box site, or you can sign up for the pro version, which is $83 a year. But if you go through our link or through our tile, you'll save 20% off that $83. And that includes allowing you to set up a custom domain name for your site. Then you can cull your pictures, add the best ones, create a couple beautiful galleries, and then, as I suggest here on this show, I would consider adding a blog with that so that you can include some supplemental information about what's going on. You can tell a few stories, and you can make the site even more sticky. Plus, the text from the blog is very good for search engine optimization, which means that your blog, your gallery, could be easier to find, and it will be in front of more people. A big thanks to Portfolio Box for sponsoring this episode of The Digital Story. I can present my best self forward, and hopefully many of you in our audience can do so as well. Being a photographer in your 30s. This is an article that I read on F-Stoppers, and I have the link to the entire article from there. And I was fascinated by this because this gentleman that wrote the article, he started his photography being a professional or semi-professional photographer in his 20s, and now he's been doing it for about 10 years. And he's looking back on how things changed now that he's this elderly 30-year-old. One way it made me smile a little bit, and another way I really understood where he's coming from, and I enjoyed the article, and I enjoyed some of the commentary that followed the article. I thought you might enjoy some of the excerpts from the article. And here's the first one. When I was in my 20s, I could go out and get blind drunk, start work 6 hours later, and pull a 48-hour editing marathon to meet a deadline and carry on the following day with very few consequences. I remember people regularly telling me that once you hit 30, you won't be able to work like that anymore. I laughed it off and carried on. Now that I am in my 30s, I can't drink and I certainly can't work for 48 hours with 6 hours sleep. That's going well. You know, I have two boys that are graduating from college, and so I sort of get what he is saying here. But the one thing that I was thinking is that at no age in my life would I want to get blinding drunk and then go to a photo assignment, you know, a few hours later, and then work for hours and hours after that. That, to me, at any age, does not seem like a good idea, but I get his point, okay? I get his point. All right, here's the next one. I take weekends off like a normal person now, and I often don't work in the evenings. I assume that things will only get worse from this point on, and that my caffeine intake will increase proportionately. I just want to assure anyone out there that is a 30-year-old, even approaching 40, that when you hit 40 and beyond, you do not suddenly start falling apart. You don't start falling asleep at the dinner table at night. You actually can stay up past 8 o'clock. that part really, I guess, depends more on the individual than your age. I am well beyond 30 years old, and I often work well into the late night, as many of you do, without any problem at all. Now, I will say that I won't do that 5 nights in a row. If I work a late night or two, then I try to make sure to get to bed at a normal time on that second or third night. You know, just to take good care of myself. It's not that I can't do it, but I do try to take care of my body as well. I want to reassure everyone who is young listening to this that you will not start to fall apart nor nod off into your spaghetti once you get into your 40s and beyond. Here's another one. Now that I'm in my 30s, I have just about finished procuring gear that I need in order to do most jobs without having to rent every time. But this was after 10 years of hard graft. I now want to enjoy my photography money in other areas of my life. And I think that is very healthy. And I love hearing that. All I have to say to that, if you are truly a photographer at heart, good luck with that one too. Here's another good one. After a good decade of photography and 30 years of being about generally making an abundance of mistakes, by your 30s, you probably have a clear idea as to where you are going. But having that bit of gray hair and a few more years in the industry means I have confidence to say no to jobs that are not for me, and I have had enough time to get the jobs that I like. And good for you. I think that is a very healthy attitude. Try to continue to direct your career, whether it's photography or anything else, into the areas that you enjoy more. As you progress through your career, you will enjoy your livelihood far more if you're working on things that you enjoy most of the time. And no one can get all of the time, but we can strive for most of the time. Here's the last one. Now that I know I can't work as hard as I did in my 20s and that I have a lot more confidence and greater understanding of direction, I plan to really focus on what I want to be doing from the age of 40 to 50 and put the time in now to secure my place in the industry for later. Then hopefully carry on working as long as my body and my eyes allow me to. And again, I agree with him. I think he's definitely on the right track. But do not worry about falling apart, but you know, in your 40s and your 50s, your body nor your eyes, and eyes can be worked on, by the way, and bodies can always be improved. But what I will say, and what I do think a healthy thing is to do, is take care of your body, take care of your mind, take care of your eyes at any age. When you do, you have a higher quality of life, and you will be able to go much longer. I'm not going to tell you how old I am right now. And in fact, I'm having a birthday this week. But I will tell you that I'm well beyond any of the numbers that I've mentioned in this article. I feel great. I'm working hard. And I'm doing a lot of physical work with my photography. And I love it. And I have a few updates for our community here. Starting out with a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast and supporting our community. I am so thankful, and we couldn't do it without you. And finally, thanks to Red River Paper, the folks that supply the printing paper, the techniques, the information. It is our go-to resource for all things inkjet printing, and we have them right there waiting for us whenever we want. All we have to do is click on a tile that's on every page of the digital story, our Red River Paper tile. It takes you over to our landing page, and then you can explore from there. I'm going to be making, hopefully, if my shots turn out well with the Olympus, and if they're not all of me peering into the lens trying to figure out what's going wrong, I'm going to be making some inkjet prints from the film shots that I did in Texas. And I really look forward to doing that, testing some of the new paper that I have. This is all made possible by our friends at Red River Paper. And I want to remind you, they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. I'm thrilled to be back from Texas. I had a great time. I love seeing my sister. I enjoyed the Texan hospitality for sure. I'm working on some great stories for next week. Make sure that you come back and join me. Until then, have a fabulous week. Take some pictures with something other than your smartphone. Meet me back here next Tuesday. Until then, bye-bye now.